we perceive certain people, certain situations as being a threat to our self-esteem.
A few years ago, I had a really kind of like important decision to make, and I actually quit my job because I felt like I wasn't empowered in the workplace.
Passion, art, expression, inspiration, innovation, I love all of those things. For me, I think authenticity, since it's a complex word, it means being present.
Welcome to Little Lessons from Big Hearts. Today's episode is going to be super powerful because we're diving into some touchy topics: confidence, jealousy, feeling empowered, and being able to be vulnerable in the workplace. And we're doing this with Little Lessons learned from Lara, who is an expert leadership coach, having helped over 1,000 people all over the world. If you're starting out in your career and you're navigating some tricky relationships, if you've always wanted to start your business and you're kind of looking for that little spark, or if you're a well-established leader and you want to create more meaningful connections with your teams, this episode is definitely for you. Like every episode, we record in different coffee shops. Today, we're in Gillam in Notting Hill. I'm Anais, and this is Little Lessons from Big Hearts. So I think for people to really understand the impact that they're going to get from this episode, we need to start with why. So why are you a leadership coach today?
So long story short, I am a psychologist. So that's my training. But I've always gravitated towards leaders for some reason, probably because my dad is what you would call a leader. So I never really had this fear of working with a very senior leader. And that ended up being my first proper job after my master's in business psychology, working in a consultancy with like very, very senior leaders. And why? Because I like working with people who have power. Because I like to make a difference, and working with very senior leaders means you can really make a difference to people's lives, because you know the consequences of bad leadership, that, you know, psychological consequences, real physical consequences even, and you know also what difference great leadership can make to the world. So that's why.
And it's interesting because that's how we met. Mm-hmm. And you were delivering a workshop at the company I was working at when I was working in leadership development. And it was a workshop around purpose-driven leadership. And you were sharing your purpose and your story. And I remember being really kind of positively surprised by how honestly you were sharing navigating some stereotypes and the impact that had on you, your career path, and then kind of like decisions you're taking today. And then I reached out, and since then we've been for dinners and we've talked about very deep conversations. We're friends. So deep conversations about like life and leadership.
Yeah, that was special time. And I know you're kind of the same in the sense that you care about redefining what leadership looks and feels like in the world in your own unique way. So
through empowerment and confidence and being authentic.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're here.
So having known you for 3 years now, what I find really special about your approach to leadership development is that spiritual side of things, and looking into the emotions and not just it being logical.
Yeah.
So what's something you've learned and working in leadership development so far?
Intuition is key. Intuition is really important. So learning how to trust that, because we've all been conditioned to not ever trust our intuition in professional settings, or, you know, so at the end of the day, it's really important that you understand how to be in touch with your intuition. And that's through spiritual development. That's one way in which you can do that. Some people are naturally more in tune with their intuition than others. So it depends where your starting point is, but I think it's really important and also underappreciated in the professional world today.
That's really true. So do you mean when you were like in a coaching session and you feel like you need to like pull more on that side, it's like listening to your intuition? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I find having coached now for 10 years, leaders, wow. I've learned a lot. And I think what works best for me is sharing my intuitive insights. However, obviously my intuition is based on a lot of experience, so of you could course. Argue, you know, but it works that way for me, that it's not just me asking open-ended questions and listening, which is obviously the foundation, but it's also sharing my insights in a way that has the appropriate level of humility, obviously. But I find that clients appreciate that sometimes.
Because it also comes from a genuine place, right?
Yeah.
And so having coached for 10 years and having helped so many people, like thousands of people, right? Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Is there something leaders have in common in terms of what you needed to coach them through?
Yes, I would say whilst everyone is so unique, the reason why most people want to start coaching is because they feel somewhat stuck or frustrated with their team or lost. However, beneath all of those feelings is, in my experience, some sort of feeling of guilt for expressing their unique selves. So whether that looks like not having a difficult conversation with a co-founder or, you know, not speaking up in a meeting can look very different for a different person. But I think it boils down to you feel some kind of shame or guilt or inhibition for expressing your truth.
That's so interesting. And is it by fear of like judgment or is it like confidence linked? Is it the imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I think it's a combination and it looks different in everyone. Fear is definitely the predominant emotion to overcome, like fear of rejection, fear of judgment, like you said, very common. So it's finding what is it, you know, for you.
And being like brave enough to tackle it as well, because going into the feelings of like shame and guilt is super vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is so interesting. And it makes me think of, so a few years ago, I did a campaign around like self-esteem for the company I was working at.
Yeah.
And it was to collectivize all the people around their value, which is self-esteem. And the campaign I did was that I produced a song and all the lyrics were going to be written with everyone who wanted to within the company. So the way we did it, we sent out a survey asking people their experience around self-esteem. And also an affirmation that they needed to tell themselves more often. For people who don't know what affirmations are, it's like an empowering sentence. I know you know all about affirmations. Starting with I am or like an action verb. And it could be like, I am beautiful. I am confident in my job. And the more you say it, the more through neuroplasticity your brain or your subconscious will believe it. And what came out of those, we had 1,300 people answer the survey. And the one affirmation that came out over and over and over and over again, keeping in mind most women were answering the survey, was I am enough. Mm-hmm. So people needed to tell themselves more often, I am enough.
Yeah.
Which sounds so linked to what you're saying around that feeling of like being yourself, I guess, more often.
Yeah.
And then within the women that you've coached, what has been like a common theme?
The women, whilst also very diverse, I would say definitely, like you said, confidence is a more common challenge that women want to be coached on. Whether that's actually true confidence or not, I don't know, because a lot of male leaders that don't think they struggle with confidence, you could argue, are very insecure. It's just hidden beneath arrogance, right?
Yeah.
But women, they tend to say, I need to be more confident. And partly that's, I think, true. And partly that's just because someone told them that in order to get ahead, they have to act more like men. So they have to be acting more assertively. So this is a complex thing. But yeah, there is something about female leaders I coach embracing who you are, which is much harder for women than men on average, you know, in work. So yeah, taking more risks and facing your fears.
I actually read a study that said that 10% of the thoughts we have every day, so that's about like 4 hours a day, we tend to compare each other. So we compare ourselves with each other, and I imagine in the workplace as well. And University of California actually asked people in different companies if they had felt jealous of someone in the previous year. And the results were really interesting because it was 79% of women said they'd felt envious of someone in the previous year, and it was 74% of men. So it's quite similar between the two. Why do you think jealousy is like something that we feel within the workplace? And is that something that's come through in like your coaching sessions?
Yeah, I think it's because we are conditioned to strive for success, and in the workplace, people are usually rewarded for individual success, not team, not, you know. So that's why we are always comparing ourselves, because we are competing, we want to get ahead. So that whilst, you know, even outside the workplace, jealousy is obviously a thing.
Yeah.
But in the workplace that we live in, a modern workplace, it's even more enhanced. Mm-hmm. And it's even more enhanced for women, because women are have more barriers than men. So that adds another layer of comparison, I find. But yeah, it's just the way it's set up. So we compare ourselves, like you said, which leads to jealousy, which is a perceived lack. Like it's a perceived lack. It's not necessarily real, but we perceive certain people, certain situations as being a threat to our self-esteem or valued social relationships we have. And that's where that feeling of jealousy comes up.
That is so interesting. And why, where does that come from? Is that something that's been like taught? Is it something from like school growing up, experiences? Like, where does that feeling of lack come from?
Yeah, I think it's a conditioned feeling, because of the societal and workplace structures. We you know, that's where it comes from. And it comes from essentially, if you want to remove work, it comes from our ego. Okay, our ego always wants to protect our identity at all costs. And if we feel like
threatened.
Someone, yeah, threatened, that, you know, we, for example, we are attached to an identity of high performer. And then if someone else performs better than us, we really feel like the ego is afraid and it's fighting for its life. So it becomes jealous and tries to, you know, reestablish balance.
We've spoken about this before. We've both been in situations where we felt like unempowered within the workplace. And I think, especially if you're being managed by someone who maybe isn't super empowering, that and maybe feels threatened or has like biases about you, that can hold your development back and also have massive, like a massive impact on your confidence, I think.
Yeah.
And I know that, for instance, for me, I've been in situations where I've had a super empowering manager with lots of trust and like kind of like go with it, and felt like she was like pushing me in front of herself, which is, I think, a very huge admirable quality to have. But I've also been in a situation where I just felt like there was something like that didn't really work in the relationship. A few years ago, I had a really kind of like important decision to make, and I actually quit my job because I felt like I wasn't empowered in the workplace. And there was one situation that really stuck out to me where we were all in a meeting. I was quite young, I was like 25 at the time, but I'd made a really good name for myself in the company. There was one meeting where we were kind of brainstorming, and my manager at the time asked for like ideas, and I come up with an idea and clearly like shut down, like no. And then another more senior person in the team, who I knew really well, mentions the same idea. And my manager at the time is instantly like, wow, like great idea. So I felt like there was like a different response.
Yeah.
And I felt shut down multiple times. And I had a conversation with her and I was like, I feel like I'm not being empowered. I feel like you're being condescending in certain situations. Tried to see how it would work, waited a little bit, but it just clearly wasn't for me. And I was like, okay, here's my notice. And mm-hmm. I like left my job.
Bye.
Having spoken with a lot of different women and having friends who are very ambitious and growing so quickly in their career, that is something that is like a common theme. Mm-hmm. So if someone is listening and they're like, oh, I resonate with that story, what do you have any tools for them? Any advice?
Two parts of it. I mean, first of all, I understand the experience of when especially a woman is jealous of you at work. I have been there. I have a lot of friends and colleagues who have been there. There's too many stories to tell on this podcast about the impact of that. So I think knowing what's true for you is not losing yourself and trying to please for too long to someone who's not, like, no matter what you do. Sometimes that's been my experience. It doesn't really matter if you, you know, change your looks and your makeup, or you dress in the most corporate way you could ever dress, or you speak in the most corporate tone you ever speak, or you really outperform and you really tailor to their style. and they're still not going to like you. Why? Because honestly, I think people respond to energy. And even though you try the best to flex, and they can tell that's not who you are, and they're threatened by your energy. So if you have positive energy sometimes, and someone is operating on a frequency of insecurity, scarcity, you know, it's triggering for them just to be in the room. It's because people are very sensitive to energy, you know?
It's a really good point.
Almost like a magnetic thing. That's what I find.
Because confidence, I think, can be triggering.
Yeah.
And I think, like, feeling feelings of jealousy is human nature. I think it all comes. But then it's maybe like, how do you swap that and turn that into something positive, or use it as like a mirror? Maybe you're projecting. I mean, I've definitely felt jealous, but then I'm like, oh, that is actually something I admire. Like, how can I learn from this person? Is that in leadership development something you should do?
Yeah, if you feel like someone is being jealous of you and therefore not giving you the right opportunities, easier to have empathy for that person. I mean, it's easy and hard, but actually realizing that they are jealous and they're acting unfairly because they're struggling deep down. And then ask yourself, who am I jealous of or have been jealous of, if I'm honest with myself? That's first step, self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
And that takes already a lot of courage to admit to yourself that you're jealous of someone. And then, like you said, that's a tool to understand, where are my attachments? Where am I attached to certain outcomes or certain identity features that I'm not even aware of? So if you're jealous of someone who looks better than you, for example, they look prettier in your eyes, you might derive a lot of self-worth from an identity that is a pretty woman or something like that. Or if you feel like you're jealous because someone is very confident in presenting, you know, that's a sign that you're attached to career success or something like that. That's always beneath that. So question whether you really need that attachment.
Yeah.
Or like you said at the beginning, your self-worth is bigger than that.
And what is it linked to? Like, what is your identity linked to?
Yeah.
And I really like what you said in the beginning, which is not to take things to heart.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like someone doesn't like you, or someone isn't acting in the best way towards you, like, it has nothing to do with you and everything to do with them.
Yeah.
And that's hard to kind of remember, but then don't feel like you need to change if you mm-hmm. know that you're being like your true authentic self, I think.
Yeah.
And if that stems from positivity and like love and respect, I think. And speaking of authenticity, that's something we hear a lot about, and it's kind of a word that encompasses so much. To me, being authentic, and especially authentic in the workplace, is about vulnerability. So you need to be able to be vulnerable, to kind of be transparent. So kind of finding the power within yourself to stand up for yourself, to show your values, regardless of the crowd and if they think the same way or not as you. Is that how you would define authenticity as well?
For me, I think authenticity, since it's a complex word, it means being present, because traditionally, we used to think, even in the field of psychology where I'm from, that we as humans have certain personality traits that are relatively stable. We don't really change. But that perspective and that science has caught up since then. And it's also been my experience that in reality, we are fluid people. We are basically a collection of experiences and insights. And to put our label onto authenticity is very hard, because it changes. So unless you can answer, who am I truly, which is literally the biggest question out there in the world, you don't really know what authenticity is. So for me, the best way to define authenticity is to a way for you to be present with your truest self, knowing that that can change at any moment to moment.
So it's being like present and knowing yourself in that moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's such a good definition.
Isn't it?
So how can we be then more authentic? Like, are there any tools to understand who we are in that moment and being more present?
Well, one is to realize first what's stopping you. So conditioning. Jealousy is a great tool for that. Notice where you're jealous, because those are signs that you're identifying with things that are not necessarily authentic or true.
Yeah.
So understand that it's highly likely that you're not being authentic in many moments, and understand where's my conditioning based on my family, based on my culture, just notice it first, self-awareness. And then I would also say introspection and self-awareness. So that's super uncomfortable for a lot of people to, whether it's meditation or getting feedback, whatever it takes for you to deepen your self-awareness of your strength and your blind spots. Introspection is key if you want to be more authentic. Know where, reflect, you know, where am I responding and in ways that are actually conditioned or because of external pressures versus because it feels true. And that goes back to intuition as well. So finding ways to be in touch with your emotions and expressing all of the emotions is key for being more authentic. And that means a lot of painful, usually experiences.
It's painful to go back and like, your life and look back, okay, when was I triggered? How has that impacted me today?
Yeah.
And I guess there's so many books, podcasts like this one, conferences and coaches out there that can help you kind of go down. What has helped you be authentic and confident?
I mean, it's a journey, but I think what's helped me the most is the experience of many years of not being authentic. So often we only realize later in hindsight when we maybe haven't been authentic. So knowing what it is like to be inauthentic in your life, which I have been, has really helped me be authentic.
Because it's so true. That's what happened with me too. Yeah. So I think I had kind of like an aha moment in university. I had a group of friends. It was a little bit like backstabby, a little bit like not the best environment. And I felt like I couldn't be myself. And I remember it was putting this massive weight on me because I had to like put on this face or like act in a certain way that I didn't feel like I wanted to. And I remember we were all in class and we had like a 15-minute break in the morning and everybody would leave the classroom. And there was specifically this like girl that had said some things about me, like, you know, gossip. There's always gossip somewhere. And I remember having that moment and thinking, you know what, even if it looks like I'm sitting alone in class, I have no friends, I'm gonna do that because I don't want to put myself in a situation where I have to pretend. And that was a really big moment for me, because then after that I was more careful with my friends and more careful with kind of who I had in my circle and who impacted me. And I think that was my moment of like, okay, from now on, I'm going to be truer to what I believe in and who I am.
Exactly. And for me, it's similar to you. And once I realized what it's like to be authentic, like starting my own business is obviously a huge boost from that.
Yes.
I understand the happiness is a complete other level. Not saying that I wasn't happy before, of course, but it's a different kind of base level of happiness now than before, where it's more like the up and down emotional thing. So that helps me be authentic, just literally knowing that that's my path.
And the fact that you founded Kaya, which is a leadership consultancy, I find that just so cool about you, because the fact that women like go after their dreams, go through risk and create their own company is something that I really, really look up to. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey of founding Kaya? So why did you found it? What is it?
I never had the dream of being an entrepreneur like some people have. I never had that. But I had the idea because I worked in a leadership consultancy, actually three leading leadership consultancy, working with leaders in the corporate world. And I absolutely loved it. But every time I spoke to my friends who were working in startups, this is maybe 10 years ago already, about what we did, they kept saying, oh, we need this. Our founders don't know how to lead. And then I was like, oh, interesting. But I never thought, you know, I could do it, or, you know, but then having worked in the three biggest consultancies out there in my field, I didn't look up to the people there, because I thought, yeah, you're really good in one area, but as a human being holistically, I don't aspire to having your lifestyle at all. So plus other reasons, but then that it's a long, it was not a step-by-step gradual process. And then eventually it was a trip to New York where I was surrounded by really inspiring founders.
Wow.
Where me and my co-founder at the time decided to just try it.
Mm.
and that's it.
That's amazing.
That's 5 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. And that's back to like, it makes me think of like being inspired by other people again and how you kind of look at that person, whether you like envy it or you're inspired, because mm-hmm. you could have gone to New York and be like, wow, that's so empowering. I want to do the same thing and learn from them. Mm-hmm. And I listened to an interview with the founder of Airbnb recently, and he was saying that whenever you start your company, that's kind of the biggest mirror to who you are. And it shows you kind of like your fears come out, your deepest, like, well, skills, but also like fears come out. What have you learned about yourself founding Kaya?
I learned that I will never stop learning.
Yeah.
Because it's never ending. So many, many things. But if you ask me, what I learned about myself is that the learning never ends.
And what has been the most rewarding thing about Kaya and what you've done until now?
For sure that I get to create art and that I get to do what I'm passionate about and work with really, really inspiring people and be free, all of the good things about being, yeah, passion, art, expression, inspiration, innovation. I love all of those things.
And you teach people how to become better leaders, right? And better founders, maybe, yeah. Sometimes because you work with people in startups as well. So how can we be better leaders and founders? What's your advice?
So obviously that's a huge topic, but self-awareness is number one. So most people think they're self-aware, but studies show that that's not actually the case. So the first step is that. So there's many ways to do that. One would be feedback. So get critical feedback. Really, that's
and
important.
Listen to it.
It's really important to get really negative feedback from people and learn to not be defensive and process it. Because we all have blind spots, and as founders, you know, you don't want to ideally create a company culture when you haven't really faced your dark side. So if you want to become a better leader, a founder, learn about your strength, of course, but also specifically the dark side that is attached to those strengths, because then when things get tough, you're not going to be as thrown by it because you are already aware of the risks of you being a leader.
What is your strength and then like the flip side of it?
Yeah, my strength is my positive energy. If I had to boil it down to one, it would be that. This is based on feedback I receive from clients, so they value that.
I'd vouch for that.
Yeah. So... yeah, it comes quite natural to me to be positive and optimistic and energetic. So that's nice. And obviously the dark side of being like that means that I absolutely struggle with people-pleasing tendencies, find it really hard naturally to have challenging conversation,
yes.
Find it hard to express anger or, you know, stuff like negative emotions sometimes, therefore boundaries and all of that.
You told me once about something that really stuck with me, which is that you did a trigger workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, again, to me, like Kaya being more like, not spiritual, but going more into like deeper than the surface level. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's such a good workshop and exercise. So often people are triggered at work, just to context. Most people are triggered often at work, actually, sometimes daily at work, in meetings that they don't want to be in, and those passive aggressive meetings. So especially if you work in a certain team, it's important to talk about these things openly. And so the trigger workshops is very simple. You ask yourself first, what is some things you really like about each other and appreciate in each other in terms of behaviors? First start with that, because otherwise fight or flight mode might be activated too quickly. Start with that. And then the second question to answer with your team members is, okay, what behaviors of each other triggers you, and how does it make you feel? Because if you don't bring in the emotion, it's hard sometimes for certain people to empathize with that. Doesn't mean it's their fault. Triggers, you know, are your responsibility, of course, but by expressing your triggers, you're making yourself more vulnerable and authentic, and it means other people can at least adjust if they want to adjust to what your triggers are. And then the third question is, what behavior of mine do you think triggers your team members. So first ask yourself, because sometimes that, you know,
well, the answer can be triggering.
That's a helpful exercise.
Was there an answer that kind of stuck with you that you got?
I would say the one is that I kind of already knew it, but some of the answers I got from my team, I knew it deep down, but I wasn't really taking it as seriously. You know, most of the time we already know what we need to change, but having these conversations accelerates our growth because we have the data. We don't, you know what I mean? We bring it to the conscious level.
And you open the space to actually like, okay, give me feedback now. I have to act on it as well.
It really accelerated my growth.
And within clients?
I mean, there was tears, and there usually is tears because people have all these emotions and triggers and they don't talk about it for years sometimes. And when they share it, it becomes, I mean, it's really transformative in the energy shift that happens.
I was going to ask, afterwards, what is it? Is it like a weight that's lifted? Is it the unsaid that's lifted? Like, how does that push team performance?
It just means there's a whole new level of trust afterwards where people start, like, first there's tears and then there's a lot of laughter. So it's like, oh yeah, okay, we all trigger each other, you know. Sometimes you feel alone, but actually you realize everyone is triggered. It's okay, you know, it's absolutely okay.
It's just being human.
Talk about it.
Being experienced and like founding your own company, having had your own company for 5 years now and like thriving and having built a team, what advice do you have for people, like any tools people can use before starting their company?
It starts with self-awareness, everything. So building a company, building a culture, building a team, much easier if you know yourself deeply. So one tool is you can do a 360 feedback survey. Okay. And even if you're not currently in a job, I actually recommend doing this outside your job and asking people who are close to you, your mom, your dad, your siblings, your boyfriend, husband, wife, your children, close friends from different stages of your life, colleagues. So really 360 and ask them one simple question. What is one thing that if I changed about myself would help me grow as a person? So just one simple question and be open to what they say and you'll be surprised. Then you can look for patterns and themes and that chances are high that that's something you need to pay attention to as you start your business. That's just one way in which you can improve your self-awareness. And most people don't even want to hear the feedback of their mom, you know? So it's like, it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
It's out of your comfort zone, but it gives you important data that you might benefit from.
That is such an interesting question. Is there anything I haven't asked you about leadership development or anything you'd like to share before I move into our final questions?
One other practical tool that maybe listeners might want to use is for, again, awareness, which is the number one leadership tool for anyone, would be to write down one goal that excites you right now. Could be anything, could be a company goal, could be anything. So, but one that excites you, that you really feel passionate about, and it may be building your business. And then the second step, once you're clear on your vision, because that's the step that a lot of people already fail at because they don't even know what they want. So step one, know what you want, get clear on your vision, write it down. Step two, be real with yourself. Be really real with yourself. Write down three ways in which your current actions are not in alignment with that goal.
And then if you don't know, do a 360 feedback.
Exactly. Exactly. Those are the things. So.
So I have four questions that I end these episodes with. The first one is, what's a lesson you thought you learned, but actually you hadn't?
I would say many. probably... I think the dark side of my strength is still an ongoing lesson that it keeps coming up as a challenge in my life. So it's probably, I thought, sometimes I think, oh yeah, now I've really learned to be, assertive in this situation or proactive, whatever. And then the next time comes and I get like, oh no, like, it's really getting uncomfortable. I have to go to a whole new level of assertiveness, a whole new level of confidence. Because even though in comparison to who I used to be, it's a very big difference in terms of confidence and assertiveness. There is always another level of growth.
Yeah.
So I think it would be that.
Like unlearning, I guess, what you've... Unlearning or like building on it.
Yeah, exactly. Unlearning the people-pleasing tendencies even more. And going back to my truth constantly.
What's a lesson someone has given you that has stuck with you?
The lesson, it's already from a long time ago, but it stuck with me, is that it's important and fully okay to have fun and to prioritize fun. Because I come from Germany. So I don't need to say anything else about that. So it's definitely important, honestly, a super important lesson that I've learned,
especially at work. Like, it builds, like building your team right through fun as well, and mm-hmm. not all seriousness. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Culturally, including like fun and ways people can like connect is so important.
Yeah, it's super important.
When was the boldest time that you followed your heart?
I would say recently. I had some offers to do some, you know, company, like deals with my company, or even like jobs offers over the years, or projects that would have made a lot of money. But I said no, because it doesn't feel aligned. It doesn't feel aligned with my other values. So I would say that was a recent situation where I said no to something that would have...
That's bold.
Yeah. It would have been easy money, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not aligned.
Sacrificing my truth.
And last question is, who was the last person to inspire you?
The last person to inspire me, not the person in the world, but the last person to inspire me was Stephen Bartlett.
Okay.
Because I asked him a question about his advice for people who are minorities when it comes to leadership and entrepreneurship. Obviously, he's a great role model on that. And he said something about using the fact that you are a minority, like we are women, young women, to your advantage, because people have very low expectation on us when you compare yourself with a white middle-aged man. So use that to your advantage. That's, I'm summarizing. But it's been just a really good reminder.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Laura, for being here, for sharing your wisdom and your lessons.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hopefully you felt inspired by the episode. If you have, please, please do share it with your colleagues, your friends, your family, anyone you think would benefit from this conversation. And make sure you also subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We've recorded from one of my favorite coffee shops in London today, which is Gillam. They were founded in 2020 and they have a few locations around West London. If you live in West London, whether it's South Kensington, Notting Hill, Bayswater, or Mayfair. And my personal favorite, which is a little top tip next time you go, is their iced latte. They blend the espresso with two ice cubes, so it makes it a little bit more creamy than other coffee shops. Thank you for watching and for listening. Hopefully something inspired you. I'm Anaïs, and this has been Little Lessons from Big Hearts. See you next time.